On Samach Zion, Omer Beis, about a third of the way down the Omer line into the tray. We're in the middle of talking about, we're in the middle of quoting Mishnayot from Kinim that relates to our Surya. We were talking about the idea that Rav Adar Bar Ava's explanation, his understanding of Rav Yeshua's din in our Mishnah, namely that if you have an Olas Ha'oif that was done L'shem Chatos Ha'oif and K'maise Chatos Ha'oif and in the place of a Chatos Ha'oif, then it's Nimshach and it becomes a Chatos Ha'oif. All three things were done like a Chatos, yeah. So then Rav Yeshua says it becomes Nimshach and it becomes a Chatos Ha'oif. And we were asking on him on the basis of, we brought a Mishnah from Kinim, which seems to contradict that principle. But we said that's different because you have two different people's korbanos over there. You can say maybe that one person's ola becomes a chatas, but you can't say that one person's chatas becomes that one person's ola becomes a different person's chatas. That much. So now we're going to continue on that topic, bringing more
to support actually the principle because...
Well, we don't know. In other words, that Mishnah is not talking about one way or another. It's one person.
He could have not been for that.
No, Mishnah is that because you can't necessarily infer from that because one way or another. Because the fact is, the Mishnah is describing many different cases where you have mix-ups between chatos and olas, and you have one example over there where the Mishnah wants to inform us about a case where you have two people chatos and olas. Not necessarily would that mean that the same principle might not work with one person. We're going to get to the next Mishnah is going to the next Mishnah that we're going to quote is going to address that issue. But I was just saying before we started the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says Kinin or Pischei Nida Hein Gufei Halacha at the end of Perek Gimel says Kinin, which is the dinim that we're talking about over here, and Pischei Nida, the dinim about when a woman's Nida cycle begins, which also involves a lot of calculations and a lot of
Is that amazing?
So those things are Gufei Halachas, and one explanation of it is I think from the Rashbam. Is even though these are things that involve a lot of, you would think you're never going to use them anyway, they involve a lot of status, not necessarily is it ever going to happen in real life, and you have a different explanation from another one of the first, I don't remember, that it also it involves a lot of math, you would think therefore maybe it's not as important to know because, it's math, it's not necessarily Torah, especially since it's dealing with status. Note, Kehane and Gufei Halachas, those things are essential parts of Halacha, as opposed to the Mishnah continues. Korpus, the Gematriyot, calculating the Korpus, the times of the Korpa, and Gematriyot, meaning Gematria, and meaning Gematria, meaning various other types of mathematical calculations, those are important also, but they're Paparoyot or Fachma. They're like condiments, they're like the dessert after the main thing. You learn Torah. So it means Gematria in the sense that we know of it, Gematria of words, but it also means things. It also means more generally mathematical and geometrical calculations, where they're not, well, to a certain extent for the Chodesh, but I mean, those are part of Torah if you're a member of the Beis Din. They are important things. The Gemara tells us, for example, in Shabbos, that a person who knows how to calculate Korpus and Mazolos and doesn't do so is taking away from the covered of Hashem and the covered of the Jewish people. Because the Bible says it'll be your wisdom in the eyes of the Goyim, and they'll realize that you're a wise nation. But the Mishnah in all this is telling us, fine, very well, go ahead, but keep in mind that those are Paparoi Chokhmah. Those are like the dessert after the main meal. The main meal is Kinnon or Pischei Nida, and other things like that are essential parts of Torah. And then you have the ability to do it. Kufas and Gematriyot, fine, it's like having the ability to eat dessert after a meal, then fine, but know its place, basically.
What is so important about Assyrian life to the nation?
Because you want them to also respect that. You want them to respect that. They should realize that the Torah is an all-encompassing thing. They should realize the wisdom of the Torah through the fact that we know Tukufis for Gematriyot, and eventually, therefore, make the Kiddush Hashem and eventually make them more receptive to it also. But whatever it is, so there is a certain importance to it, but the importance of Kinnin or Pischei Nida, the Mishnah and all this is telling us, is greater than that.
From the same source.
They might be from the same source, I don't know. Yeah.
Question. If the Kinnin and Pischei Nida are so important, why are they Nida is the last
Masechta? It happens to be the last Masechta, fine, that's neither here nor there. Kinnin is raised at the end of our Seder. That's the point also. Even though it's all the way at the end, there's another reason you might think it's less important. Nevertheless, it's still okay.
Kinnin is also very, very close to the end.
It is. Right. There is Let's get into it. Okay. Come, let's bring a proof from another Mishnah in King. You have a case as follows. Chasas v'oila u'stuma u'mforeshet. Here again, you have a case involving two women, but here it's different than the previous case. Now, we have to understand, in order to understand this Mishnah, we have to know that you have, within one person's cane, within one person's pair of birds, you have two possibilities, and when you have when you have two people, then there becomes a third possibility. Namely as follows. When a person brings, so if you have one person, and again, like we said yesterday, typically we're talking about it in terms of women, because they're the most common ones who bring bird korbanot after they gave birth. So you can have as follows. When one person brings a pair of birds, one is a chasas and one is an oila, you have two possibilities. It can be what's called kein mefureshet, where they specifically designate when they buy them, I plan to use this one for the chasas and this one for the oila. And then you have what's called kein stuma, which is where they just say, I'm going to be bringing these. I'm not deciding yet which one is going to be which. Then what happens is when... Indeed, then if you mix them up, you have fewer problems, exactly. Then what happens is, what determines which one is the chasas and which one is the ola? When the kohen does the avoda, then when the kohen does the malika and the zrika of them, that's when it gets established in the case of a kain struma, which one was which.
The kohen asks the woman?
No, that's the thing. If it's a kain mefureshet, she will have to tell him, this one is a chasas, this one is an ola, and I'll have to do them appropriately. If it's a kain struma, if he asks her, she'll tell him, I don't know, I didn't choose yet, and then he'll choose on the spot which one he's going to do for the chasas and which one he's going to do for the ola. So that's called a kein struma. Now, when you have two people involved, then you have a third possibility also, which is that they can decide within one of the pairs of birds that they buy, we are going to make it mefureshet. We are going to say this one's a chasas and this one is an ola, but we're not going to specify which one belongs to which one. So now you can have a case like this, Rashi described, that you have two women who between them they have to bring three sets of korbanos. And again, we could have, like yesterday, for example, they already brought some of their korbanos, or you could have that their other korbanos involve a behemah, if they're rich, or it could be a case where for one reason or another, one of them only has to bring one, whatever it is, you have a case where one of them, therefore, has to bring, where one of them needs two oilas and one chata, and the other one needs two chatois and one oilas. So now, suppose what they do is as follows. So they buy three sets of birds. One set they left struma, they didn't specify which one in it is the chasas, which one is the oil. A second, or actually, it actually gives them in a different order, so fine, but whatever. This one is going to be Rachel's oila and Leah's chasas. The second one they said, this second one we're not going to decide at all when we buy it. There's a chasas somewhere in here, there's an ola somewhere in here, but we're leaving it up to the kohen to decide. The third one, they said, it is an ola and a chasas, but we're not determining yet whether this is Rachel's second chasas or whether this is Leah's second ola. That's the scenario. So that's the thing. So there's different kinds of determination. So yeah, that's what we're saying. Chasas va'ola ustuma umfureshim. What you have here is as follows. You have one where it's completely determined. They determine one is a chasas that belongs to Pliny, and the other one is an oila that belongs to Pliny. You have another one that is partially determined. It's a chasas and an oila, but they didn't decide which one belongs to which person. And a third one that's completely scoffed and completely undetermined.
So what could it be?
There's going to end up being a chasas and an oila in it, but they haven't decided yet who it's going to be or which one is going to be which. One of them is going to... No, because the second one they said it's going to be a chasas and an oila. They just didn't say it's going to be Rachel's chasas or Leah's oila.
The second one is chasas and oila. The third one is they also is chasas.
The third one, eventually, we know there's going to be a chasas and an oila in there. But the difference is, in the first and the second one, they specified this bird is going to be a chasas, this bird is going to be an oila. That's in the first one. In the second one, and in the first one, they also said it's going to be whose it is. In the second one, they said which carbon this bird is going to be and which carbon this is going to be, but they didn't specify which one is Rachel's and which one is Leah's. And the third one, they didn't specify anything at all. So somewhere in, eventually, one of these is going to become a chatas and one of these is going to become an ola. But right now, we're not determining, right now, we're not picking which one is the chatas and which one is the ola. So either one of them could end up being a chatas, either one of them could end up being the ola.
And the second one, they say, there's an ola and a chatas.
No, not just they say there's an ola and a chatas. They say, which this one is the ola, this one is, the, yes, this bird is the ola, this bird is the chatas. No, there's two things. You have to determine what kind of carbon it is and what person it belongs to.
What kind of carbon it is?
Whether it's a, whether this particular bird is an oil or a chatas. And
that's two things.
No, that's one thing. What kind of carbon it is. It's either an oil or a chatas. It can't be anything else. There's no other possibility.
Okay.
And the second thing they have to determine is who it belongs to. So in one cane they determine both of those things. In one cane they determine only one of them, which kind of carbon each bird is, but not who each one belongs to.
Yeah.
And the third one, they didn't specify anything at all. They left completely strong. That's the girsa that we have in front of us is like that. It's chatas v'ola ustuma umfodesh. So we're actually talking about, they're actually talking about three groups of birds. Tosfos points out that really for the purposes of the case that we're going to learn in the Mishnah over here, really it doesn't matter. All you need is one stuma and one umfodesh. And there is actually a girsa, I think the Rambam's girsa, is that instead of ustuma, it's struma umfodesh. We are talking about there's only two sets of birds, one of which is struma, and the other is where they didn't specify what the birds are. Yeah, okay. Chatas v'ola struma umfodesh is the other girsa. Fine. Okay, anyway. So here's the scenario. Right. Then it would mean, in other words, there's only two sets of birds instead of three. All right. So here's the case, then, says the Mishnah. Also, kolam lamayla. So now again, when they bring them to the kohen, so now if the kohen does all six of these birds lamayla, thinking that they're oilas, then you have the case that you have in the, that we had in the previous Mishnah, mechta kosher or mechta posel. What it winds up is half of them are kosher and half of them are posel, because out of these six birds, three of them were supposed to be oilas, three of them were supposed to be kataris, and therefore what you end up with is three of them were done properly as an oila because they were lamayla, therefore they're good. Three of them were a chatas that was done in the place of an ola, and therefore they become possible. And so therefore, another three chataris are going to have to be booked. Kulan lamata, and if he did all of them below, on the bottom half of the mezeach, like you would do a chatas, again, master kosher or master possible. Again, three out of the six of them are good, because three chataris have now been dealt with. The other three are possible because they were olas that were brought on the bottom half of the mezeach, which is the reason why we're bringing this in our sugya, because on the face of it, isn't that a case of nimshach, where an ola transforms into a chatas, so why are we saying they're possible?
Because there's two arms.
No, well, but again, we have one cane over here. We have one cane over here where there's no specification at all. Right. There's one where there's no specification of the bialim, and there's one where there's no specification at all. Which one was an ola and which one was a chatas? Yeah.
When it's different owners.
No, that's fine. But over here, the second one, one of these kinim, they didn't even designate which one is owned by which. That's the point. Therefore, you should be able to. It's not
exactly.
in the previous case at the top of the Amud, the previous Mishnah, we had the case over there. You it was explicitly specified to begin with that Rachel has a chatas and Leah has an ola, and therefore we're saying you can't turn it from one into the other. Here you have one cane where we know there's a chatas in it, we know there's an oila in it, but there wasn't any specification whose is whose. So why shouldn't it? And that's why we're asking, why shouldn't it be? Why should it? That's what we're going to get to.
So
why?
Grab one of them. And if it was a chatas, then, and we assume that Ravada is correct,
then
the chatas would have turned into the oila.
No, the other way around. The oila would have turned into the chatas.
The oila would have turned into the chatas.
Right.
Since the bialim are universal,
right.
In other words, it could be, it was undetermined, therefore you didn't have the same problem as the first Mishnah in which the bialim were changed.
Were determined to begin with,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. We never said that a korban does not have a bialim.
Eventually it has a bowel, but the point is, at the time, you have, since they didn't determine the bialim ahead of time, then it gets determined at the time the korban is brought. If we have the concept of meshicha, then fine, this oila that was done l'masa l'shem chasas now becomes l'shem the bialim who need a chasas, and therefore that one ought to be kosher as a chasas. That's the point of the question. But we're going to finish quoting the Mishnah anyway.
Besides, before blood is taken to
before the Malika, actually, but whatever, fine. Before he does the Malika, he has, yeah. Okay. Cheskin l'may lev cheskin l'masa. What if the Kohen did half of them above and half of them below? Now, what Rashi learns over here, actually, it doesn't mean that all six birds were mixed together. You have Rishon, you actually, well, six, but, well, because we're talking three chinim. Okay, four coins together here, so whatever, fine. We're not talking according to Rashi that all of them got mixed together. Each cane was kept separate. All it is within each cane, he didn't pay attention to which one he's doing above and which one he's doing below. The Shittim Kubetis brings, where brings from Rabbeinu Shimshon Mishkan, brings a long explanation about how it could be that not. You could make the case work also, even if all four of them got mixed up together. Whatever it is, or all six of them, whatever it is, Einak Sheva Elastuma, what happens therefore is the only one that is kosher, therefore is the Stuma, because the Stuma one is completely unspecified, not the type and not the owners. So therefore the Kohen, when he does them on the spot, makes one of them into a chasas for Rachel and the other one into an Ola for Leah.
The other ones
are kosher because we don't know whether the right ones were done the Milo or the Masa. He did half of them, he just took three of the birds and did them Lamaila and three of them Lamasa, meaning from each pair, he took one and did it Lamaila. But for example, with the first pair, he didn't pay attention to, did he take the one that was supposed to, that was a Mephoreshes, right? It was specified that this bird is an Ola, this bird is a Pasas. He didn't pay attention, he took one of them at random and did it Lamaila, not paying attention whether it was an Ola or a Pasas, so it could have been the Pasas, and no good. And vice versa, if he did it Lamaila. Come on, he's a Kohen. There's not just been a firing a Kohen. Okay, so. Okay, no. Come on. No. First, stop a second. First of all, that whole concept is that I think you have some of the Rishonim learn that only happens to a lady, not to a Kohen, because you have a mitzvah, but Hidashta. The idea that if they sleep on there, that if they're sleeping during their guard duty in the Beth Mikdash, then they're... No, whatever. He didn't know. Come on. There's no such thing as firing a Kohen. It means he'll have to learn his job better. It means maybe also you could say, fine, he'll be on the hook to pay. He'll be responsible to pay for the Kohen. Let's say, fine, but come on.
What's interesting, you see how the mission is written in a general sense, where many, many, many different things can be derived from this.
Yeah.
From the case, because mm-hmm. he put three cannons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, so the point is, therefore, so only that one is kosher. The one that was not designated at all. So we divide that one between them. One was Yotzer Huchatas, one was Yotzer and Ola. Then they go and buy another cane in partnership, and they bring it, Rashi says, on a tshnah. If the original Ola was for Rachel and the Chatas was for Leah, then this one will be the other way around. The Ola for Leah and the Chatas for Rachel. It's not in the other way around. So, the point that we're asking is that we see that over here you don't have any Olas transforming into Chatas. That's the question. Why not? That's what we're asking. The Ilum of Roshan was, so the one that, well, so it goes against Rabbi Abba, Abba's understanding, I'm probably sure, right? Okay. So why is it? So okay, I can understand. Rashi says the ones that were Mefuroshim l'shem Bailim. Okay, that's the same as the previous Mishnah. You can't take them from one owner and give them to the other owner. Therefore, that one is definitely out. But the second one, the one where you said that this bird is a Chatas and this one is an Ola, but you didn't say which one belongs to this one. Why this one belongs to the person? Why is it completely possible? Nihi nami de Ola kreva l'mata. Granted, an Ola to Ofis is supposed to be on the bottom half of the Zaya, but since it was brought as a Chatas and kemaise Chatas and in the place of a Chatas, kimshich to have a Chatas Ofis. Let it be pulled from being an Ola and become a Chatas. So then you should have that, as we said before. You said before, according to Rabbi Yeshua, that's possible, right? You're going to answer, okay, very simple. Okay, who says that Mishnah is like Rabbi Yeshua? Maybe that Mishnah is according to a different Tana. Can't. That's where we have to establish that. But the Gemara is asking, we don't know that point yet. The Gemara is asking that maybe you could say that Mishnah is like Rabbi Yeshua. The answer is, how can you possibly think to say that way? That doesn't go according to Rabbi Yeshua. I can prove to you that the Mishnayos in Kinnim over there go according to Rabbi Yeshua.
All the Mishnayos in Kinnim?
Yes. That's what I was saying. Well, I don't know, without exception, but at least, You have Masechta Kinim is basically, I mean, even though it's divided into three prachim, it's basically one long continuum because it talks about many different cases, one after the other. Many times, the Gemara assumes that when you have something like that, a bunch of Mishnayos that all form one continuum like that, that they all belong to one path. So if we can show, and we're going to, that the last Mishnah in the Masechta goes according to Rabbi Yeshua, then we would assume that it means that all the previous ones do also. The Toshma, come, we're going to prove from the last Mishnah in the Masechta Kinim, we were going to see at the end of it that Rabbi Yeshua makes a statement to summarize what it says in the Mishnah over there, and to summarize the opinion of the Tanakhama in the Mishnah over there, which implies that he is the author of that opinion, and therefore that means Mishnah is like Rabbi Yeshua. So then you have the problem.
Now we're satisfied that Rabbi Abba Bar Abba is wrong?
Well, so far, we're
unless
we find a way to answer him. But yes, at the moment, right.
Didn't bother to answer.
We're trying
to figure out.
Yeah. Okay, so Toshna, come, we're going to prove from the last mission over there, and we're going to quote the whole, now, for purposes of our Gemara, really, not necessarily is the entire Mishnah really relevant to what we're trying to prove over here. The main point that's relevant is the fact that at the end of it, you have two different opinions, and Rabbi Yeshua states a summary according to one of them. And that one of them is the Tanakhama versus Ben Azai. So we see that Rabbi Yeshua is the Tanakhama. But we're going to quote the whole Mishnah and analyze it anyway, because the Gemara often does that for Mishnayos that have no Gemara, because otherwise we don't have any other place to discuss it in the Gemara.
So that's one Mishnah. How do you interpret that Mishnah to all the others?
Again, because they're all one long continuum. They're all talking about one case after another. Bamed Varamamurim, this and that. And therefore, we should assume that it belongs all to one Tana, unless it specifies otherwise.
So okay. You're saying that there's one Mishnah in the whole Masechta Kinim?
Effectively, it's as if it was one long Mishnah. As a matter of fact, actually, you know, we were talking at the beginning of Ezra Makoman, the fact that there are us that points out that in Ezra Makoman and Mishnah, that anyway you have no Machloikas in, the second Peres of Kinim actually is like that also. The entire second Peres of Kinim is one long thing after another with no Machloikas, and it continues right there into the third Peres. There's no Machloikas in the third Peres either until you get to the very end over there where you have Rabbi Yeshua against Ben Azar. So yeah. Now this Mishnah, by the way, it's very complicated to understand the scenarios over there, which is why I brought a bunch of diagrams hopefully to help clarify it. And you, on top of that, you have Rashi has one way of learning the Mishnah, and the Rambam has another way. Plus other Rishonim, Tosfos actually doesn't really address it very much. You have other Rishonim. I think you have the Riva, who is one of the Balei HaTorah, which has a whole other explanation of it, but okay. Anyway. All right. If a woman says, I promise to bring a pair of birds as a korban if I give birth to a boy. Well, Yolda Zachar, Mevi'ah Shtei Kinim. So now if she gives birth to a boy, she has to bring two sets of korbanos because you have Achas L'Nidra and Achas L'Chevasa. Number one, she made a neder, so therefore she's obligated to bring two birds because of that neder, which those two being a neder, those two are going to be oilos, because you don't bring a chatas as a neder. And one is going to be for her chayva, whereas her chayva, if she's poor, as most people were in those days, then it will be two birds, one as an oila, one as a chatas.
So it's supposed
to be that she's bringing four birds, of which three of them are going to be oilus and one of them is going to be a chatas.
Well, that's
because just for the fact that she's giving birth, she's liable to bring two oilus. No, sorry, just for the fact that she gave birth, she's liable to bring a chatas and an oila. That's what the Torah says. Aside from that, which is two birds. Aside from that, she had made a neder that if the baby that I'm carrying, if in the end when I give birth, it's a boy, I will bring a neder, then that's a neder. A neder can only be oilus, because there's no such thing as a chatas being a neder. So now she's liable to birth, and now she's required to bring three oilus, and one chatas. Yes. Okay.
Three oilus.
Two for the neder and one for the chayv. No? Here, you want to see it diagrammed over here? Yeah, there's supposed to be four birds over here. Two for her chayva, two for her neder. The neder consists of two oilas. The chayva consists of an oila and a chatas. That part is straightforward. Okay. So now what happens is she gives the four birds to the kohen. Now, being that there's three oilas and one chatas, the kohen is supposed to do three of them on the top half of his half, like an oila, and one of them on the bottom half, like a chatas. Now, suppose the Kohen did not do that. he saw she's bringing two pairs of birth. He figured, okay, you know what happened? She gave birth twice, or she gave birth while she was a zava, which is the case that we'll learn about in Nida, and therefore she has to bring one pair of birds for a chayva for zivus and one pair for a chayva for...
That
she hadn't brought the korban from the previous one yet, right? Let's say, for whatever it is, for whatever reason, he thought that it was two chayvas rather than a chayva and a net. And therefore, Ella also shayim l'mayla v'shayim l'masa. So he ended up doing two of them above the top half of the mizbeach, and two of them below, instead of three, and two below. V'lo nimwach, and he didn't check with her, because if he didn't check with her, it just means that he didn't check. One was mistaken. The reason why the Mishnah is mentioning v'lo nimwach, actually, is because the Mishnah talks about over there earlier in that parak, it talks about various distinctions between whether the Kohen was nimlach, whether he asked before he did or whether he just acted. But for our purposes, let's not get into that. When we learn the Sefer Kinim in another year and a half, that's the Shem, then we'll delve into that. Okay. Anyway. Fine. So what happened? So now you have one of them became possible. Because what do you have over here? You have the chasas was a chasas, good, it was done lamasa. The one oila was done lamayla, good. One oil, another oila was done lamayla, good. But one oila was done lamasa, no good. So therefore, one is out.
So the oila that was done lamasa should have been transformed according to the Yeshua.
Well, one second. In this case, she only needs to bring one chasas. But once she brings one chassas, so you're not going to have it transformed into a second chassas, because she's not obligated to bring a second chassas in this case. That's not the issue. The issue, rather, is that, no, again, we're quoting this Mishnah only because Rabbi Yeshua is at the end of it. But, no, so that wouldn't be a case of Mashiach, because the chassas is already brought. No, because she already brought a chassas. When we say that it transforms into a chassas, is when a chassas needs to be brought. In this case, a chassas is already brought.
We're happy in the middle of the
okay. Time. Let's continue.
That whoever wrote this is against Rav Adam.
Okay, let's go.
Now we're trying to figure out if it's
okay, let's continue. No, it is. Okay, the point is that here we're not talking about Meshicha, because Meshicha is only where there's a chassas to be brought, and here the chassas is already brought. He did two of them lamasa. So one of them counts as the chassas, and the other one, there's no second chassas to be brought. So therefore, there's no Meshicha. Okay, so therefore, the result is, Tzricha shetobi oid pridachas, so she has to bring one more bird, and then she'll be marked with it up, the Kohen will be marked with it up above, and we're good, therefore, because then that takes care of that missing oila.
Okay.
Right, so therefore, so you make up one. Now, continues the Mishnah, what about, min echad, all of that only applies if all the birds she brought, all the four birds that she brought, were all from the same species. What about mishneimim or umishneimim? What about if they were two different species? What if one pair was turdim, which are turtle doves, and the other one was bnei yona, which are young pigeons? Now, Rashi learns that whenever you bring a pair of birds, regardless whether it's clover or regardless whether it's a neder, you always have to have the two of them have to be of the same species. There's a Mishnah earlier in Kinim that mentions that concept. Rashi learns that it applies both to a clover and to a neder. The Rambam disagrees with that. So later on, we'll start going through the Rambam's shita. So therefore, in other words, according to Rashi. So what happens therefore if the birds over here were two different species?
All of them?
No, there's only two different species. So there's four birds. Two were one species and two were of the other. But so now what you have is so now if one of them was done lamasa, then Tovi Shtayim, then she has to bring two to make up for the nether. Why? Because let's look at this one over here. Because Rashi also learns that the first pair that are done, whenever you have a chayva and a nedava coming at the same time, the two that are brought as a chayva always come first. That's how Rashi learns. Again, we will see, as we'll discuss, that the Rambam disagrees with that premise also. The Rambam disagrees with that premise, and therefore he understands on this. I'm not going to mix and match as I often do, because that'll just get too confusing. This Mishnah is confusing enough as it is. Right now we're going to stick swiftly with Rashi. So, again, what she did is, to begin with, she brought, two Torim for her chayv and two bnei yona for her nether, let's say. Now the kohen did one of them, one of the oilas, one of the ones that was supposed to be the mila. He did lamasa. So now you have to have a tur and a bnei yona in order to complete the nether properly, because we because it wasn't specified to begin with which one was brought as the chova and which one was brought as the neder. So therefore you have, in effect, what happens therefore is one ola from each pair became possible, because you're not sure, and therefore you need to bring two to make up for it. One ter and one benyoyim. Another case, Pirsha Nidra, what happens now? Let's add another factor. Let's say that when she first made her neder, she specified explicitly, she said that when if I give birth to a boy, not just like in the original case where she says I'm going to bring a king, she said explicitly I'm going to bring a pair of Torim, or I'm going to bring a pair of Bnei Yona. So now suppose she did that, Pirsha Nidra, but then she forgot what she had been mafarish. So now what should she have to do? She's supposed to be bringing three pairs of birds then. She should be bringing one pair, which will be a chatas and an oila for her chov. That's over here. She should be bringing one pair of turim for her nether, in case her nether was turim, and another pair of bnei yona, in case her nether was bnei yona. In the event, she only brought two pairs. She brought one pair of birds, she brought four birds, all of the same species, all totem, let's say. So she brought four totem. She committed to bring explicitly, she said, I'm going to bring two totem for my nether. But then later on, she forgot whether she had said totem or bnei yona. What should she do? The right thing for her to be doing, she should be bringing totem and bnei yona. Plus also, she has to be bringing a pair of either totem or bnei yona for her chayv. So she's supposed to be bringing six birds then. Four of one species and two of the other species. Of the four of one species, one of them is going to be a chasas, and the other three are going to be ovos. And of the other species, both of them are going to be ovos. What happens though? She didn't do that. Instead, she just brought four of one species. So she didn't bother bringing the other species at all. But now we can't be sure if she fulfilled her nether. So therefore, she's now going to have to bring three. So now, tzrichas lahavi or gimel prison miminachad. So now, if the kohen made the mistake and then did one of the oilas lamata, which therefore becomes possible, now she has to bring three korbanos. One to make up for the missing oila, and the other two from the other species to make sure that she's covering her nether either way. So she may have, her nether may have originally been bnei yona, and then therefore the whole thing was no good, because she had only brought totem for her nether, which didn't fulfill it. Again, that's all min echad. That's if the four birds she brought are of the same species. Umid beizmin. And if the birds she brought to begin with were of different species, one pair of totem and one pair of bnei yona, and the kohen did one of them lamasa, then tovi dalo. Now she's up to, she has to bring four birds to make up for all the possibilities. Four birds, which will all be oilas. Because again, you have the problem: which one of the original ones was brought as the chova? Which one was brought for? Which pair was brought first, which becomes the chova? Which pair was brought last, which would be the nedava? And you also have the problem: you don't know whether the nedava was supposed to be totem or bnei yona. So because of that, therefore, she winds up having to bring four more over. She has to bring one pair of totem, and she has to bring one pair of bnei yona. And that'll cover all the possibilities. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Now we have the two pairs, right? One of right. In other words, again, if previously when she brought the two pairs instead of the three that she was supposed to, because if she had brought all four of the same bird, then the maximum that she would have to be bringing to make up for it would be three: one to make up for the possible one, and two for the other possibility. Because now she brought from two different species. And you can't mix and match between the chayva. Therefore now we have to add an extra one. Okay. Now we have more cases. Kava nidra. Now we have another, now we can add in another factor. Let's say now she was keveya. Keveya, Rashi learns, means that she said that she didn't just say like she did at the beginning of the Mishnah, if I have a boy then I'm going to bring a nedava. She said specifically that I'm going to bring a nedava together with my choy. So meaning, in other words, if the scenario ends up that the choy becomes possible, then she's going to have to make up not only the choy, but she's going to have to make up the nether again as well. Because her nether was specifically that she's going to bring her nether along with the choy.
The two together.
The two together. In other words, effectively, what she's saying is, I'm going to be bringing an extra big korban. Instead of just one chatas and one oila, I'm going to be bringing three oilas altogether. So therefore, so if one of them becomes fossil, then now you have, then now you have more
chatas from the oila and two oilas.
Well, the way it's supposed to be is she's saying, right, that I'm going to be bringing four korbanos altogether. But again, what happened is that, so she brought all four korbanos. The problem, though, is that the problem is that, first of all, by rights in this case, she ought to be bringing sick birds, because again, the case is that not only she said, I'm going to bring my nedava together with my choiv, but also she specifically said what the species is going to be. And now she forgot. So she's supposed to be bringing six, therefore. She's going to have to bring two for her choiv of any species, doesn't matter. And then she's going to have to bring two Torah and two Bnei Yonah to cover all the possibilities with her nether. Instead, again, she only brought four. She brought all four Torahs, let's say. So now what happens is, because she said specifically that this nether is going to be together with the choiv, therefore we have another wrinkle over here. If any part of the choiv became possible, then now we have to make up for the choiv as well in order for it to work. So therefore, now she's up to, now she has to bring five birds that are going to be brought Lamaila. One for two Bnei Yonah, in case she had said Bnei Yonah for her nether, two Torim for the same reason, and one more to go with the Choyva, to go with the other bird of the Choyva, because the one that became Postal, the Oila that became Postal, might have been the Oila from the Choyva. And now she needs to be bringing that again in order to be bringing it with her nether. So now she's up to be bringing. So now she's up to bringing five korbanos.
One pair.
One pair in case she was, in case her nedava had been Bnei Yonah. One pair in case it had been Torim, and one more of the same species as the chafas, because the chafas is kosher. It was on the matzah. So she has to bring one more ola in case. The oila that became possible by being done lamasa was not the one from the nether, but rather the one from the choiv, and she needs to bring another one because her nether was that she's going to bring her nedava together with her choiv. So now we're up to that she has to bring five. Again, miminechad. All of that applies if she brought all four birds of the same species. Mishneimin and Rebeizmin, and if she brought them of two different species, then you have the other wrinkle, because again, then you have the extra problem that now you're not sure. Now you're not sure whether the chasas for her choiv was a tor or a ben yoyna, because we don't know which one was done. We're not clear which one was done on the bottom of the mizeach. So therefore she has to bring a tor and a ben yoyna to cover both cases. If her chasas was a tor, then she needs another oila a tor, and if it was a ben yoyna, she needs a ben yoyna as her oila to go with it. So now we're up to six. So you have those two to cover the possibilities of her choiv, plus again she needs four to cover the possibilities of her nether. Okay. Now you have another thing. Nasanasan Lakoyan. Now Rashi continues. So now the Mishnah continues, and Rashi explains that this is still a continuation of the case of Kavan Nidra. Nasanasan Lakoyan. So now what happens is you can have another case. She brought them to the Kohen. She's not even sure what she brought, whether she had brought Torim or whether she had brought Bnei Yonah. And the Kohen went and did the Korbanos. And he doesn't even know what he did. He didn't keep track of which ones he did Lamaila and which ones he did Lamasa. So now you have Sricha Dalab Pridin Lanidra. So now you have to do everything over again, basically. She needs altogether seven birds now. She needs four to cover her nether, because all of them might have been possible. He might have ended up doing the Oilus Lamasa and the Hatoris Lamaila, which would make them all possible. So therefore she has to bring four to cover her nether, which are all going to be Oilus and Dunlamaila. She has to bring two to cover her choiva, one a tur and one a ben yoyna, which are both going to be oilus. V'chatas achas, and she has to bring one chatas. Four for the neder, because we don't know what she specified and what she gave. and two for the oila in the chayva, two for the oila in the chayva, and one for the and one for the chapas for the chayva. So there's four, two, and one. It's seven. So that's where we've gone in order over here. We've gone with a set, with ascending cases where we have, where in the first case you only have to bring one to make up for it, then two, then three, then four, then five, then six, and now we're up to seven. Ben Azai and the Beis Chatzaris. Ben Azai says she would actually have to bring two Chatzaris. And the reason why Ben Azai says that is because you have a machloikas earlier in Masechta Kinim. We said before that the din is that when it comes to a choiva, and according to Rashi also in a dava, you can't bring the two birds from different species. They both have to be totem or they both have to be b'nei yonah. So in earlier in Kinim, it talks about what if you did bring them of two different species. So, yeah, no, so, well, so what do you have to bring in order to make up for it? So the Tanakhama there says that what you do is, so in other words, let's say, so you brought an Ola was a Tur and the Chatos was a Ben Yonah. So now what do? You need a Ben Yonah to cover for the Ola. You need one carbon. Whereas Ben Azai says it doesn't matter which, according to the Tanakhama, it goes whichever one the Chatos was, the Ola has to be the same thing. Ben Azai says it's not a question of whether what the chatas was, it's a question of which one was brought first. So therefore, Ben Azai says that over here you don't know what if all of the original ones were all done l'mayla, because the Kohen himself isn't sure whether they were done l'mayla. So therefore, maybe the Ola was brought l'mayla from Torim, maybe it was brought l'mayla from Bnei Yonah, and therefore she needs to bring two chatos, which are going to be done l'mayla, one Tor, one Ben Yonah. Whereas the Tanakhama will say it doesn't matter. You have one of them where the Tanakhama is going to say that the Tanakhama is going to say that you only need one chatas because you brought one tur or one ben yonah as an ola, and that's it. Then you can bring the chatas. You can bring one chatas, and you're covered no matter what. Amr Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua says on that, Zeu she'amru, this is what they mean when they have the expression, k'shu chai koloi echad, you have an animal, like you have a sheep, that when it's alive, it has only one voice, or actually Rashi says a ram to be exact, when it's alive, it only has one voice, k'shu mes koloi zayin, now when it's dead, then it has seven voices, because Rashi quotes from the Mishnah over there, you have, after it's dead, you take the horns of it and make them into shofaros. You take the leg bones of it and you can make them into flutes. You can make the skin into a drum. You can take the intestines and make them into stringed musical instruments. You end up getting one me'ayim for one kind of musical instrument, b'nei me'ayim for another one. The point is you end up with seven, and therefore, Rabbi Yeshua is drawing an analogy that over here you have originally she should have only had to bring one korban if there had only been the one uncertainty, and like this she ends up having to bring seven. So it's similar to the ayo that starts out with one voice and ends up with seven.
What's that?
As we just said, a ram, when it's alive, it only has one voice, it's one creature, it makes one kind of sound, and now when it's dead, then it can make, then from its body parts, you can make seven different kinds of sounds. So the point is, Rabbi Yeshua, who summarizes that, he must be the Tana who's arguing with Ben Azai and said that you only have to bring seven korbanos, because according to Ben Azai, you should have to bring eight korbanos. So therefore, we see that the Tana of the Mishnah is Rabbi Yeshua. If that's the case, then we have a problem, because then going back to the previous Mishnah, what happened to Mishicha? So again, in our Mishnah itself, there was no possibility of Mishicha, because you only needed one chatas. But in the earlier Mishnayis, where you needed two chatas or more, then yeah. Before we get to the Gemara's answer and the continuation, first of all, if we can run down what the Rambam understands on this Mishnah, and second of all, there's a sicha in Chelik Yudayin where the Rebbe analyzes what is Rabbi Yeshua adding with his statement over here, just that he's trying to give an example of one thing turning into seven. There are many such examples he could have given. He could have given an example, one person dies and he has seven sons and his seven sons split as Yerusha. Why is he mentioning the case of there of one aisle?
How about the
resident? So the in the sticha that Rebbe talks about, what it is like this. Like this, the original thing she had to bring was an obligation on her. because she had an obligation because the Torah tells us she has to bring after she gave birth, and an obligation because she made a neder. But now, because of all these mistakes and uncertainties and things, she winds up bringing as many as 7 more korbanos. You have to ask, therefore, what's the story with these 7 korbanos? Do we consider them that they're a sofek, or do we consider them that they have, to a certain extent, the status of a choy? Now, you have such a thing as korbanos that are brought on a sofek, but that's where you have a sofek to begin with. For example, you have a sofek whether what she gave birth to is considered a baby. We'll have cases in Nida where she miscarried, and it's not certain whether it was fully formed yet or not. But over here, we know to begin with she had a chayva. All of a sudden, though, now she's only bringing things because of a suffix. No, the point Rabbi Yeshua is making is that what we say is the one coil of the ram transformed into 7 different coils. Meaning, in other words, that her one chayv, transformed into 7 different chayv. It's not that they are, practically speaking, they are brought ala sofek, and therefore the chatos can't be eaten. But nevertheless, the fact that she has to bring them is not so much a matter of sofek as a matter of badra, as a matter of there's an actual choiv on her to bring them, and that's the point of Rabbi Yeshua's analogy.
Well, you could have brought the same analogy with demonstrating a choiv with...
No, but that's the point, in other words, that you have, the very same animal, which had one voice to begin with, now transformed into having 7 voices.
The very same man, one person, he transformed.
No, but it's not transformed. I mean, you say brach hara davor, but it's still not the same thing. They're still separate pieces.
Okay, we're going to give it up.
All right. Now let's run down the case of the Mishnah according to the Rambam.
Okay.
The Rambam does not accept the 2 premises that Rashi was basing himself on, which is, number one, that the Rambam learns that yes, with a choyva you can't have them with mixed species, but with an adava you can. You could have as an adava 1 Torah and 1 Benyoina. And a neder and adava, same thing. And the other thing, the Rambam does not learn that this din that you have that you can't mix and match, he learns that it applies only to choyva, not to adava. Second of all, that Rambam also learns, unlike Rashi, that if you're bringing a choiva and a dava at the same time, that necessarily the first 2 that were brought are always the choiva, and the later ones are always the dava. No, that Rambam doesn't learn that way either. It's possible for the dava to be brought before the choiva.
Okay.
So therefore, so the Rambam understands like this. So again, if you have over here that, in the most basic case where there were supposed to be 4 birds and he did 1 of them lamasa, then okay, we said that's fine. There's only 1 bird. That's straightforward. If she brought 2 Torah and 2 Bnei Yonah, then the problem is, you don't necessarily have that the Choyva was brought first, but you also don't necessarily have that the Nedava has to consist of 2 Torah or 2 Bnei Yonah. It could consist of 1 Torah and 1 Ben Yonah. So therefore, what he has to do is he has to bring 1 Torah and 1 Ben Yonah to cover the possibility. Because one of the ones from the Nadava became possible. We don't know which one. So therefore, so she brings a Tur and a Ben Yonah, and that covers it. Well, it still means you have to bring 2. The difference is that Rashi would learn that in that case, fine. Rashi, so far there's not really a difference. And so far there's a difference in the underlying logic between the Rambam and Rashi, but the practicality in that case, you're still bringing 1 Tur and 1 Ben Yonah, regardless. It's one to either Rashi or Rambam. And then Rambam spells out, because if he had done the first two he did are the 2 lamasa, the 2 turim lamasa, then you need 1 more tur lamaila to cover the chayv, because the chayv has to be both. Right, but the point is that then one of the ones lamasa will have been machasa, so now you have to have a tur lamaila to complete that, because the chayv has to be of the same species. If it is the Bnei Yonah that were done lamasa, then she needs the Ben Yonah to do her chayv. So you have 2 oilas, but the difference is that, according to Rashi, the reason why she was bringing 2 in that case is to cover the possibilities with the Nedava, whereas according to the Rambam, she's bringing 2, 1 Torah and 1 Ben Yonah, to cover the possibilities with her chayv. Okay. Now we go on. Then Pirsha Nidra, which is that Rambam understands Pirsha Nidra differently than Rashi. Rashi learned that Pirsha Nidra means that she specified at the time that I'm going to bring 2 Torim as my neder, or I'm going to bring 2 Bnei Yonah as my neder, and then she forgot which one it is. The Rambam, and that's why Rashi had said that in principle she should have to bring 6 in that case, she should have to bring 2 for her choiv, and then 2 Torim and 2 Bnei Yonah to cover all the possibilities with her neder. The Rambam doesn't learn like that. the Rambam learns that Pirsha Nidra means that she said, when she gave them to the Kohen, she said, these two are for my neder, and these two are for my choyva. And the Kohen didn't pay attention, and he did two of them l'mayla and two of them l'masa. So now, again, since he doesn't know which one he did l'masa, l'mayla rather, so now she has to bring two. She has to bring two to cover her neder, and one, and one, so she has to bring two, three now, all three are going to be oilos again, but the two are going to be for her neder, and one is going to be to cover the possibility with her choyva. Because it might be that the two that were done l'masa were the two of the neder, and then both of them are possible, because they're supposed to be oilos. So therefore, she winds up having to make up for that, and she also has to make up for the choyva.
For the choyva,
according
to Rambam,
there has to be. Here we're talking about where it was all she brought them all from one species. Therefore, there's no possibility of mixing species, but she has to bring one more ola in case it was the ola from her choyva that was brought them after. Okay. Then again, if she had brought two totem and two bnei yonah, and when she gave them to the kohen, she said, these are for my chayv, and these are for my neder, and he got mixed up, and then did two of them l'mayla and two of them l'masa, then now she has to bring four. As we said in the Mishnah, she has to bring four, and the Rambam now understands that the four, unlike here, we first have the difference. According to Rashi, in the case where she's bringing four, all four of them are erlim, because they're all covering the various possibilities of her neder. The Rambam, who doesn't learn like that, who says that a neder you can mix and match, he learns, therefore, that the four are two of them for the species that she said she's going to bring her neder from. Two of them can be from either species, and you're going to have one for a chatos and one for an ola to cover the chayv. So according to the Rambam, you'll have three chatos, you'll have three olas and one chatos in this case that she has to bring, where according to Rashi, she's bringing four olas. Then we continue. Kava nidra, and the Rambam learns kava nidra to be the same as what Rashi says, Pirsha Nidra. Rashi had said that Pirsha Nidra means she said, I'm going to bring my neder as Ola, or I'm going as Torim, or I'm going to bring my neder as Bnei Yonah. That was what Rashi had understood for Pirsha Nidra. The Rambam, who said Pirsha Nidra means what she told the Kohen, he learns that Kova Nidra means that she said specifically, I'm going to bring Torim for my neder, or I'm going to bring Bnei Yonah for my neder.
Pirsha Nidra, Rambam is...
Pirsha would be that she told the Kohen, when she gave them to him, these are for my neder, these are for my chod. Whereas Rashi had said Pirsha Nidra means that she had said at the time she made the neder, I'm going to bring two turtles, or I'm going to bring two bnei yonah for my neder. So now, Kova Nidra, so she said, in other words, if she said that if I have a boy, I'm going to bring two turtles specifically, and then now she brought two for her neder, two for her chod. So now what happens is, here's where the Rambam says, similar to Rashi, that you have two mistakes over here. Number one, the Kohen did two of them l'mayla and two of them l'mata, and he doesn't know which one was which. She also forgot what min she had chosen, whether it was Totem or Bnei Yonah. So now she winds up having to bring five. Now she winds up having to bring five korbanos, four olos and one chatas, two Totem for an ola, two Bnei Yonah for an ola, which will all cover her neder. And one chatas to cover her chayv. That's again if she had brought all four of the same species. If she brought to begin with two totem and two bnei yonah, and now she forgot whether her neder was totem or bnei yonah, and the kohen did them, and we're not sure which ones he did lamaila and which ones he did lamata. So now she's up to six: two totem for an ola, two bnei yonah for an ola. All four of those are to cover the possibilities with her neder. And two totem, or two bnei yonah for her chayv, one l'mayla, one l'masa. One is an ola, one is a chas. Then, if you have the case that she gave them to the kohen, the final case in the Mishnah is, she gave them to the kohen, she forgot what she gave him, whether it was totem or bnei yonah, and the kohen also doesn't know whether he did them all l'mayla or all l'masa, or half l'mayla and half l'masa, and now we're up to, also she has to bring, six over there. And you have one more case that the Rambam says, what's the case where she has to bring seven? Unlike Rashi, who says that the seven is all birds, the Rambam learned what's the case where she winds up having to bring seven is. She made a kriyas, she said that her chayv is going to be totem or bnei yonah. She also said to begin with that her neder is going to be totem or bnei yonah. She forgot what it was. And the problem with kava chayvasa is, kava chayvasa does not mean, according to the Rambam, that she said to begin with, I'm going to bring my chayva as totem, or I'm going to bring my chayva as bnei yonah. Because according to the Rambam, that doesn't matter. The chayva, you can bring either one, as long as you bring them both in the same creation. The problem is that the Torah tells us that the chayva can be either an animal plus a bird if she's rich, or two birds if she's poor. Chova Chova, according to the Rambam, would be that she specified at the time that I'm going to bring the korban of a rich woman or I'm going to bring the korban of a poor woman. If now she forgot what it was, and she also forgot as far as her nether, whether it was certain totem or B'nai Yonah, so now we're up to, she has to bring four to cover her nether, as usual, two to cover her chov, as usual, and then she also has to bring, then she also has to bring one more, she has to bring one, a seventh bird as a chassas, and then she also has to bring actually an eighth creature, but not a bird, now she has to bring one kevah. Because she may have said that I'm going to bring the korban of a rich woman. So she winds up bringing, so the Rambam learns that when we say over here in the Mishnah, that she brings seven means seven birds plus one animal for an oila. So that's how the Rambam learns the scenario. That's how the Rambam learns the scenario.
Wow.
Okay. Be that as it may. So now getting back to the Gemara. Again, once we've established that the Mishnayos and Kinnim go according to Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua, we said Rabbi Adaba Abba holds of the concept of Nimshach. So why, in the previous Mishnah that we quoted, the case about the three pairs of birds, why don't we not say that the Ola becomes a Chazer? The answer is, Amor to Amor Rabbi Yeshua, La Puka Midem Ye'ila. Fine, you know what? We can accept that Rabbi Yeshua says, according to Rabbi Adaba Abba, that he says that the Ola can transform into a Chassas only insofar as being, that Ne'ila doesn't apply to anymore. So to go back to what we talked about the other day, Ne'ila does not apply to a Chassas or Oif that was brought to Kashrus because the Kohenim can eat it. So fine, he can say, even though Tosus points out the usual rule is that if the Kohenim can't eat it, then Ne'ila still applies to it, but every rule has an exception, and this would be the exception to that rule. But, because we would say the fact is that that Tosfos discusses, so wait, let's learn the Gemara first and then we'll talk about what Tosfos says. So fine, you could say that Rabbi Yeshua says it's considered a chassas to the extent that Me'ila won't apply to it. Would you say necessarily that Rabbi Yeshua says that it gets transformed into a chassas to the extent the person has fulfilled their obligation
right.
for a chassas?
Right.
Not necessarily. So that's why we said it. That's why in the previous Mishnah, that's why in that other Mishnah, we say, fine, Meshicha, it can be considered a chassas to that extent, but it's still a chassas that's possible, and you're not Yotze. It's a chassas possible, and you're not Yotze, because after all, it was Shalom Lishma, and therefore she's still going to have to bring another chassas, which is what we said.
So it transformed into a chassas to the extent that it's Me'ila,
Tosfos talks about a couple of possibilities in that. One possibility is regarding this. Why should we say that? Ne'ila doesn't apply to it anymore, but it's not Ola. So one possibility... Tosfos says like this. One possibility is Rabbi Yeshua might hold, Midaraisa, sure it does. It does become fully a chas. However, Midrabbanan, we don't do that. Midrabbanan, we will say that it doesn't count for your chayva and you have to bring another one. So therefore, so it goes out, it's no longer Me'ila applies, yeah? Because to bring a korban Me'ila, you can only do for something where you chayv Me'ila daraisa. Here you wouldn't, because midaraisa is a kashal chassas. So therefore, only Midrabbanan are you having to bring another
one. Why would the Rabbanan do a thing like
that? The Rabbanan would do, because they would say because the Rabbanan didn't want, for example, too easily confused with cases where you do a chassas shaloi l'shma, where you do an ola shaloi l'shma, whatever. So over here, that's basically what it is, an ola shaloi l'shma. Tosfos points out, in that case, among other things, you would have to say that Rabbi Yeshua apparently therefore would hold that the whole concept of not bringing chulin into the azara is not an issu d'oraisa, because if it was, then how did the Rabbanan make you bring another korban where you might not be chayiv and it would be chulin b'azara? Okay, fine. So that's one way of learning it. The other way of learning it, which some of the Rishonim do, is that actually Rabbi Yeshua would say that it's even considered a kosher chassas to the extent that the Kohenim can eat it. We're not going to consider it a posel chassas. We are going to consider it a kosher chassas even to the extent that the Kohenim can eat it. All it is that Rabbanon are making a zera that it shouldn't a takana that it shouldn't count for the chayva. But other than that, it would be 100% a kosher chassas.
So there's no
meila. No meila because it's edible. In other words, according to Tosfos's way of learning it, you have to say that he's sort of making an exception to the rule of it. Even though normally if there's no achil of the kohenim, then the meila still applies. Here we have an exception. But you have some rishonim moon. It's not even an exception. The kohenim actually can eat it. The only thing is that it doesn't count for the owner.
That's so awesome.
Halacha, I don't know. The Rambam, the Rambam doesn't.
Where we don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's Halacha, but I mean, the one who passes on these things in general is the Rambam, and I don't think the Rambam. Well, I don't think the Rambam specifically addresses one way or another. He just says that it's not subject to Ne'ilah, but I don't think he specifically addresses. I don't know if he specifically addresses the question of whether it becomes fully the Halacha.
Whenever you say what's the Halacha, you're basically saying what's the Rambam.
Well, yeah. But yeah.
Fine.
All right, let's continue.
Okay, wait, let me get my
leave back. The Mishnah says, all the people who are posel to do korbanos, meaning, in other words, for example, Zor, Tomei, all the psulim that we had in the second parak, Shemolku, if they do melika on a bird... Well, no, but Tomei is a posel. Actually, we'll deal in the Gemara with the details of which psulim are we talking about. If they do malika on a bird, malikos in sula, so the malika is possible, because we said before it has to be done by a kohen, and they have to be tar, etc. The aim of tamer, however, such a bird that was killed by such a malika is not matame when a person swallows it. Because again, even though the malika is possible, it's considered psuloi bakodesh. The psul took place in the kodesh, as we'll see in the Gemara. And therefore, to that extent, therefore, it takes away the fact that it's neveva. So therefore, if a person eats it, then they don't become tamei. Also, if the kohen did the malika with his left hand, and we learned earlier in the sefer that avodah has to be done with the right hand, obalayla, or he did it at night, where avodah is only supposed to be done by day, or shochat cholim b'knim b'kodshin b'chod, or if he took cholin and brought them into the azara and shechted them rather than doing melika on them, which is a normal thing that you would do to cholin, but they're also to eat because they're cholin b'azara, or v'kodshim b'chot, or he took kodshim and shechted them b'chot, also in the Tamas Beit Abliya, then again they're not metame, the body of them is not metame Beit Abliya because they're not nevela, they were done a proper shita. But on the other hand, molach b'sakin, on the other hand, if he did melika using a knife, now that's no good because Malika does not follow the procedures of Shita. We're going to learn in the Sefer Cholin that you have five major things that pass through Shita. And here, with Malika, you're violating at least two of them. You have, the Gemara points out in Cholin, Rashi brings it over here. Number one, you have the problem of Chalada. Chalada means that when you're shechting, the blade of the knife has to be exposed. It can't be covered by the muscles. So like this, when you shecht an animal normally at the front of the throat, which is the way you're supposed to shecht, then what happens is the muscles contract when you cut them, and they spread apart, and therefore you have a nice large cut in there, so the knife is not hidden while it's cutting. And then you cut through the simonim, and you're good. As opposed to over here, what happens is malika is done from the back of the neck. You're first going through the spine and the spinal cord and the muscles of the neck. Only eventually are you reaching the simonim, which are at the front of the neck. So you have a problem with chalada, the edge of the knife, or the edge of the knife, or maybe also Tarsus points out, also the tip of the knife, whatever, is hidden inside the neck, and therefore it's possible. No, but that's a malakasakin. If he did malika from the back of the neck, but instead of using his fingernails, instead he used a knife, now you have a problem. That's not a valid shita because of chalada. Also, another reason is because typically malika is done by pressing. That's called drasa. Drasa by shita with a knife is possible. You have to do a back and forth motion. That's the point. The reason why shita is not in the back of the neck is not good is because of the problem of halab. You also have the problem that if you cut through the spinal cord and most of the flesh, really also, then it's already available before you ever reach the simonim. We talked about that the other day. Fine, but what you do with malika, we said, is you make sure not to cut really also until you've finished with the number of simonim that you have to do. Right. But with shchita, you could conceivably do the same thing. So you wouldn't have a problem of being nevela, but you would have a problem that you did halada, and therefore it's also nevela, but it's not a proper shchita. If molach b'sakin, so if he did malika using a knife, or molach cholin b'sinim b'kodshin b'chot, or if he took a cholin bird and did malika say it inside the azara, which again is no good, because normally malika should leave the animal, should leave the bird in a vela. It's only when it comes to kodshin that you have the special thing that is considered the equivalent of shchita and the kohenim kodshin. So like this, if you took chulin din malika on them, then it's just considered killing. It's just nevema, yeah. Or the kodshim b'chol. So if he did malika to kodshim, or for that matter, chulin outside the azara, or turin shalahi gias manan of neyenish avas manan. Or if he did malika inside the azara to kodshim, but these were torim, these were total doves, where the time for them to be kosher as korbanos has not come yet. Total doves are only roy for a korban when they're mature. So it's not, I don't know if it's an eight. I mean, I suppose it must be a certain number of days, but I don't know, weeks or whatever, but I don't know. The way that we define it is the Mishnah mentions elsewhere is that once you have that chilas tihu vazeru vazeh posel. When they have yellowish or golden colored feathers, then around the neck, then they're puffled. So in the case of turim, that happens in an earlier stage of their growth, and then eventually they lose that, but then they're kosher. On the other hand, b'nei yonah sh'ovas manan, with b'nei yonah, it's the other way around. They have to be young. They have to be before they started developing those yellow hair. Once they do, then they're puffled. So if you have totems that are past the time, or b'nei yonah that haven't yet reached the time, and you do malika to them in the azara, then they're possible. Or shiyav shagafa, or if the bird's wing was dried out, or shenismes ena, or its eye was blinded. Now those birds like that are possible for a korban. By birds, you don't have the concept that they can't have a mum, but you do have to have that they're not mechuster eva. You can't have them missing a limb. We learned even in Avodah Zarah that even Wahabra, when the goyim bring korbanos to their getchkes, they don't bring mechuster eva either. We know that from Noach, but. Tosfos talks about over here whether mismet ena just means that it's blind, or does it mean that his eye was actually poked out, is actually removed from the socket. Anyway, the shnikta ragla, or his foot was chopped off. All of those, if you did malika to them, metame beis abliya, all of those are metame when a person swallows them, because then the malika does not take them away from being, the malika then does not take them away from being the beis. Because such things are not kosher as a korban to begin with. That, while the general rule is, Kolshep Sula the Kodesh, anything which became possible in the Kodesh, like in this case, in the first cases in the Mishnah, so Rashi learns that it means it came into the Azara, it was kosher, and then it became possible in the Azara. Einim Mekamim Beit Abliyah, so then if we did Melikate, it's not Mekamim a person when he swallows it. Loihoi Sula the Kodesh, but if the Sula existed before it ever came into the Kodesh, Mekamim Beit Abliyah, then it is Mekamim when a person swallows it, because then the Melika doesn't take it away from being the Beit. Well, everybody agrees with that. Well, we're going to see in the Gemara not necessarily, but also Tosfos also discusses what is this about this business of psula b'kodesh or loy psula b'kodesh. Is it necessarily what Rashi is saying that it came behechsher into the azara and then afterwards it became possible? Not necessarily, because well, you could have, for example. So first of all, we're going to discuss in the Gemara over here. We have a machlokes on that topic anyway. But also, Tosfos talks about a couple of other possibilities. What it means psula b'kodesh or not. One thing is Tosfos says it may relates to the issue of an olu lo yodu that we've discussed before and we'll discuss again later in the sector. So maybe the definition of psul of a kodesh over here means anything where if the b'yevid you put it on the mizbeach, then it would still remain on the mizbeach.
Even though,
in other words, psul of a kodesh, nothing to do with where the psul took place, in other words, but whether it's kosher enough to remain on the mizbeach.
It's not close enough to
me. Yeah. Right, that would be aimed still of a Kodesh, right. So that's one possibility. Then Tosfos mentions another possibility. Still of a Kodesh, or aimed still of a Kodesh, can be, as we'll see in the Gemara, that can also mean something where there is sometimes when such a thing is kosher when it comes to korbanos, versus aimed still of a Kodesh would mean a kind of thing where there's never any case where such a thing is kosher. Because we're going to talk about in the Gemara. For example, let's say we mentioned in the Mishnah about doing malika with the left hand. Now, malika with the left hand is possible. However, as we're going to see in the Gemara, there is a certain avoda, namely one of the avodas of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, carrying in the spoonful of Torah into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which can be done with the left hand. So therefore, you can't say that's always possible. You have an exception. You have an exceptional case where it's kosher. So Tosfos discusses that may be what we mean over here by psul of a kodesh. There's a kind of psul where, in this case, it's possible. You can't do malika with the left hand. However, there are other avodas that could be done with the left hand. As opposed to, for example, Zen, the coin bubble carrying in the circle. As opposed to, for example, some of the other ones that we mentioned in the Mishnah, for example, Torah and Mayona that are outside of the time frame when they're kosher, or if you did Malika with a knife or whatever, none of those things are ever kosher, that would be called Ein Psula B'Kodesh. So those are the different possibilities. Okay, we'll get into the Gemara tomorrow, and we'll start analyzing the Mishnah.
Yeah. So to conclude the Mishnah with Rabbi Yeshua, so you have to have, in order to have Amshasa, you have to have...
Well, Rabbi Yeshua would say that for there to be Meshicha, you do have to have, first of all, we established earlier in the Sylvia, that you have to have that all the three things have been shown. And even then, the Gemara is saying, it still doesn't become 100% a Chakas in the sense that the owner should be Yotze, they're Chayiv. It's either that it's Kosher Midaraisa, but Kosher Midarabanan, or maybe even it is Kosher Midaraisa, but the Kohenim can eat it, or whatever, the different... No, okay. Same way, for example, an ola that was shechted shalai l'shma. We said the owner still eats them; they're still considered kosher to that extent, but they don't count. So the owner's kosher. Because the same thing. For example, an osham that was shechted shalai l'shma. Same thing. Kohenim can eat it, but it's not doesn't count for the owner's kosher. So the same thing over here, that's the Shittim Chabad, that talks about the possibility that the same thing may be true over here. Maybe it's not just a Zeta Zerabbanan, that it doesn't count. It might even be Daraisa, that doesn't count for the owner. But Daraisa, they can still eat it the same way as an Asham, for example, that was brought to the Shittim. That's not it. All it is, you're saying it in the case of an Ola that supposedly transformed into a chassas, but okay, that's because normally, of course, a chassas shalai l'shma is possible, but here it's an Ola that transformed into a chassas, so therefore that rule might apply.
It is considered a chassas, but it doesn't make the yotze, but still the
kohanim can eat it. According to the other way of looking at it, Tosfos is saying that the Rabbanan made a gzera that it shouldn't count for the chova, and apparently, according to them, also the kohanim wouldn't be able to eat it either.
So which opinion says that it would count for...
So everybody agrees it wouldn't count for a chova. The question is that only because of a gzera de Rabbanan, or is that because that's how it is d'oraisa?
We don't.
You have the different opinions among the Yerushalmim.